Welcome to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Talk about stuff that's messing with your head and crazy stuff that's happening in the bed. Why? Because many church folks have fallen in the darkness. Bible calls us to walk as children of light. The Bible says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days, they evil. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, the Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Ladies and gentlemen, there seemed to be a takeover here in America. And one of the ways that our nation is being taken over through communism and socialism. Let me explain first. There is a takeover by a lot of people that believe in socialism and communism. A new poll said that 44% of the millennials want to live under socialism. And one of the ways that the people who are trying to take over America is by hijacking and infiltrating the church. Yeah, see, if you want to really take down America, then you need to take down the church. And if you can take down the church, then you can take down America. And we have a presenter today here on Ghostbuster, Curtis Bauer. Curtis Bauer, he's done a lot of research on the socialism and communism and their activities here in America. And he was on the Jan Markell show, and I want us to listen in today as he talks about how the church done been hijacked and how the church done been infiltrated by those that believe in socialism and communism. So get close to your radio and listen.
Curtis Bauers, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on again.
Curtis, in my summary there, what have I missed that the audience needs to know before we move into part two?
That a lot of what is going on is shocking to a lot of us, so they shouldn't feel like they're all alone. It has moved forward at a faster pace than anyone anticipated, even those who have been paying attention to what's been happening. We need to do what Jan is doing. You need to share these shows with people. Educating others about what is going on is one of the most important things you can do in this time where we all feel almost helpless.
It's as we said, the left has taken over so much, from technology to music to education to the media to Hollywood to social media to politics, sports. Curtis, whoever would have thought that the communists could take over sports? It's the furthest thing from my mind.
It is unbelievable. But again, they want all the levers of influence. So do sports have any influence in America? Oh boy, do they.
Yes.
When I saw pictures of Little League football teams a year or so ago, and they played the national anthem at the Little League, and all the boys are on their knees. And I thought, wow, they know how to get people that have influence to be on board with what they're doing.
Yes, and how convenient, again, as far as it concerns young people, to be the masters of the universe with social media. Our young people and plenty of adults, their pastime is social media. Well, it's controlled by the extreme left.
That's right, and they censor anything that doesn't go along with the party line. And that's what really lets us see how far this is moving. Because YouTube and some of those channels, they're just starting to delete anything that's not in agreement with the ultra-leftist radical position.
And we talked about the intense hatred of President Trump, and we talked last week also about what happens if President Trump wins the election in November. Quite frankly, I personally am hoping that's the case. But what will be the fallout if you think we've seen some, let's just say, agitation here in the last few months in the streets, etc.? Maybe mild compared to what's going to happen if the president is rewarded with a second term. We don't know that, but when we see the passion behind the leftist agenda, I am concerned that if the president wins the election in November, we have a meltdown. If the president loses, our country's handed over to a Marxist ideology. And I think you said in 100 days, right, Curtis?
If they get the House, the Senate, and the presidency, yes, I think in 100 days, they would accomplish more than they have in the last 100 years.
And why do you say that? Because the president's been in office 3.5, almost 4 years, but why do you say in just 100 days, this is going to be lightning fast, this will happen this time?
Because they're not playing games anymore. They're not even pretending to be pro-American. They are trying to sink and destroy openly and clearly. So I think the AOCs and all those different people, if they really have the majority in the House and the Senate and the presidency, they're going to just implement these things at lightning speed because that's what they want to do. What happens is when you get voted into power, it gives you the illusion that everyone's for you, so you can just do what you said you're going to do. They especially have always fallen to that. They just start moving ahead with their agenda. I think if that were to happen, it would just be the Green New Deals and all those type of things would instantly be put into law, and our life here would change immediately. Biden has already told us, like in charge of gun control, Beto, and he is for total gun control.
Right.
We know a lot of these things from what they've said openly, the direction they're going. If they have the power next time, I think they're going to use it. They're not going to gradually step through things like even Obama did a little bit. They're going to move forward because they don't want to take a chance of losing control.
Interesting. And then you said last week that 90% of those on the left in the Democrat Party leadership, 90% are Marxists. Bluntly, Trevor Loudon has said the same on this program. I know that's shocking to a lot of my listeners. And I think we need to clarify too, Curtis. We've got some believers listening who choose to vote Democrat. You know, that's your choice, folks. The potential consequences of this can be so grave if, in fact, it's true, and no one's come after you or Trevor Loudon to say, you know what, you're a liar, that 90% of those on the left are now following the Marxist agenda. We talked about that last week. Why don't you back that up right now? Take a minute.
If you go to the Communist Manifesto and look up the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto on your computer, you'll look through that list and you'll see that they agree with every single one of those. And they also agree and believe in the fundamentals of Marxism, which is this. It's the belief that the good of the many outweighs the good of the few. That doesn't sound too bad on the surface, but when it's implemented from the top down, it always ends in the abuse of the individual because all they are going for is the good of the many. And of course, the individual doesn't know what's best for the many, so you have to trust government. Because how would you know in your little town what's best for the world? So it puts you in a subservient position to just accept whatever they say about the environment or about socialism or about how we're going to do economic reforms in the world. It makes you subservient. And as we see over the 20th century, every time when it was implemented, it abused the very people it was supposed to bless. So that's how we know, because they agree with all the Marxist positions. And therefore, that makes you a Marxist, whether you know you're one or not. They might not even know that.
They might not.
But that's who they are.
I want to deliver here what I promised both last week and kind of going into program two here. And that is, how is this affecting the church? It's affecting the church lots of ways, but one way would be social justice. I'm playing clips, folks, from the product we carry. It's in my store. It's in my newsletters. And it's the Agenda Twin Pack DVD set. And so you're going to get two DVDs that Curtis has produced. He started producing these almost a decade ago. And as we said last week, some folks have said to him, how did you know when you started making these films, which, by the way, it's an award-winning film, you nailed everything. He really did. And that's because he studied this, frankly, since he was a kid. We're playing heavily off of the Agenda DVD, the Twin Pack. I'm going to play a clip here because our target this hour is just how is Christianity and your church in the crosshairs?
Christianity has always been the main target because they knew with a strong Christian church, their plans of a one-world government that requires a one-world religion to succeed would never be possible.
And I think that's why Christianity is a religion that people intent on despotism don't want around. The surest sign that the elites in our society are up to no good, just as the founders of our country predicted they would be, by the way, is that they're trying to get rid of Christianity. Because Christianity is what encourages people, emboldens people who live according to good conscience, acknowledging God, to stand firm in the right.
Step one was to remove God's word, the absolute authority and standard of the church.
It's as if the uncomfortable things that hold us accountable have slowly been scrubbed from the message from the pulpit. What was sin 2,000 years ago is sin today. And that's a message I think we need to hear quite often from the pulpit, and I don't hear it that much.
Research shows the majority of Americans don't believe anymore that the Bible is God's word. But a more amazing testimony to the left's success is the vast majority of seminaries in America don't either.
Curtis, explain how and when were the seminaries infected with this communistic message?
We know from testimonies given to Congress back in the 1950s, when a few of the top communist officials defected away from communism because they started to see it wasn't the right path. They were interviewed before Congress. The congressman asked them, "What have you been doing to take America down from within?" And they very eloquently state that because of their limited numbers and just the few people they have that are faithful, the number one thing they had been going into to make a difference to take America down was the seminaries since the 30s. That's why the mainline denominations were taken over back then in the 30s and 40s, because they have a hierarchy, so it's much easier to take over. You just work your way up to those positions, and then you are in control. But then it continued on, and they realized the evangelical church that had sprung up because those churches, the mainline ones, had all fallen away. They didn't have a hierarchy, and so it was much tougher for them. So then in the 50s and primarily really in the 60s, they started going into the evangelical seminaries as fast as they could to get their degrees and then stay on and be the professors so they could teach the pastors. And that is why we have seen the dramatic change in the evangelical church over the last 50 years.
Plus the death of discernment. Totally gone.
It's so far gone. Jan, I think we were talking about this earlier. I have had the blessing and privilege of traveling all over this country for the last 10 years with my family. We've been in hundreds of churches in 43 different states, and that's the number one thing I was even telling my children after one of our trips. I go, "Kids, you know what's happened to this country? We have lost discernment." It was rampant in the churches, the pastors, so many places, people didn't seem to have the fundamental discernment to know what's good for their kids or not good for their kids or good for their church or good for their congregation. So we have a crisis because of that.
And then we have here in the summer of 2020, what comes along, and it sounds so good because Black lives, they really do matter. Of course, all lives matter, I maintain. Then this organization comes along in the summer of 2020 following the tragic death of George Floyd here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. A lot of pastors, a lot of churches said, "This sounds good that we honor Black people, African Americans. My goodness, haven't they been oppressed? It just seems like a noble cause." What's wrong with this picture, Curtis Bowers?
Well, again, they didn't dig in to see, is it really about what they're saying?
That's
right. That's the discernment. To go, let me look at this on the surface. One thing that should have been a red flag is when you see the destruction going on, you go, wait a minute. The fruit of righteousness, the fruit of truth, is never revolution, ever. Destruction and destroying, that's never the fruit of a good movement. Right there, they should have said, wait a minute, this is not what it appeared to be. But even the term Black Lives Matter is so divisive, because then all the other people groups are like, hey, what about us? And that's what they're doing by coming up with that. The Marxists that came up with that group and that run that group, they wanted to divide the blacks off from us. We don't want that. We want them with us. We want to be unified. We want to be together. We want to be able to love them and go to church with them, be a blessing to them. And they want to divide them off so they can use them. And that's why they're trying everything they can to just fracture us into a million pieces and the black community just happens to be one of those pieces, and we need to say, no, we're not allowing you to solely use people based on the color of their skin. And we need to just be wise enough to love the black people that are around us, because they are so confused because of all the lies they've been told. And we need to let them know, no, we love you and we're grateful for you. But we need to stop those that are using them and expose them.
Very well said. And again, this has crept into the church. And I think the church sees this as almost the new evangelism. The new salvation gospel replaced by the overall picture of social justice. We're kind of narrowing that social justice picture down right now to the Black Lives Matter, because that has been the emphasis of the long hot summer of 2020. My hometown wrecked by Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Curtis, what's the difference between Black Lives Matter and Antifa?
Not much. They work together. They are like sister organizations. The left is very good about working together, so there's about 20 groups working under Antifa, which is an umbrella group, and one of them is Black Lives Matter. One of them is the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement.
Okay.
They're all working together. And let me just read you a couple of their goals
Go
on
ahead.
Their website.
Please.
So you see what these groups are really about. Goal number one, liberation will be won by any means necessary. You see, that's what's going on. Here's goal number two. We will destroy the state, police, military, corporations, and all those who run the American plantation. If you want to know what they're about, that's a Marxist revolution. People that think that's too strong a word, it's not. Number four, systems of punishment will be abolished. There will be no law to enforce, no money to protect. It's going to be communal, which is communism. Number six, there will be no government. No person or group will have power over another. Yeah, a little fairy tale. And when you create that, here's what you need to understand, people listening. A lot of people go, why do they want chaos? They want chaos, and they want to turn it into the Wild West where there's no law and order, mm-hmm. and they want to defund the police and stuff, because in chaos, people demand help, and then they will rise up and crack down, because you have to crack down when you have a total lawlessness, and you have to do things totalitarian, and that's why it's about. But it goes on. Number eight was abolish private property. It says, number nine, alongside international comrades, they're even using the communist term, we will destroy all borders for the free movement of people everywhere. And just on and on. It's all destruction, revolution, and totalitarianism.
Curtis, we're heading for the days of Al Capone.
That's right. That's what they want. You have to break everything down where things are so desperate they can put up their puppet. If you haven't studied the 20th century, this is what they did in 50-plus countries mm-hmm. from 1917 to 1980. They stirred the people up. They got it where there was chaos and violence and revolution, and then they put their man up who was for the people and for justice. He gets voted into power. A lot of people don't know that. Most of the countries the Soviet Union took over in the 20th century, their leader was voted into power. They didn't take over with tanks. They took over with a movement exactly like what we have in America today.
Would Venezuela be a good example?
Yes, Venezuela is exactly what happens. Mm-hmm. They come in, they pillage your country where there's nothing left, then the tanks do roll out.
Then they roll out.
People. It's never worked. And so when we allow them to teach our children and others that that's what we're shooting for, it's utter foolishness. And we really have our job cut out for us.
I want to play a little clip here, it's very short, that helps explain a little bit. This is social justice, because again, the purpose of this hour is to go head first into figuring out how did this enter the church. The National Council of Churches, World Council of Churches turned left so long ago. Matter of fact, the National Association of Evangelicals, my understanding is, came along in the 1940s to counter the National Council of Churches. Then the National Association of Evangelicals has taken a left turn. Here, starting in the 90s and even more so in the 2000s, terrible left turn. We don't have time to go into that, but our point is every denomination, every theological stream today is being affected by this leftist agenda. The main thing they're using is, because it sounds so good, social justice. For instance, real briefly here, the Palestinian cause. Aren't the Palestinians poor and downtrodden, and aren't the Israelis beating them up? No! But that's the narration that's out there, is that we have to be with the Palestinians. We have to stand for justice, social justice, because the Israelis are the bad guys. No, the Israelis have made the Palestinian life pretty good in the Middle East, one of the best in the Middle East. Here's just a little description about social justice, and then as we move into the second half of my programming this weekend, we're going to take a very serious look, again, a deeper look, at the social justice effort in our churches.
The Lord is a God of social justice. That's the message in many, maybe most, churches and synagogues in America and the West today. But here's the problem. The Bible doesn't actually say that. It says in Isaiah, "The Lord is a God of justice." You'll find a lot of references to justice in the Bible, but you'll never find it preceded by the word social. But you're probably thinking, what's the difference? Isn't God the God of justice and social justice? Well, not if he's consistent. You see, God cannot be the God of justice and social justice because social justice is not just. Justice is getting what you deserve without favor. Social justice is getting what you don't deserve because you are favored. Justice is blind. Social justice is not. Let's say a man robs a store. Justice demands but one thing, that he be tried in a court of justice and, if he is found guilty, punished. That is not how social justice works. Social justice doesn't only ask if the person is guilty. It asks about his economic condition. Is he poor or wealthy? About his upbringing. What kind of childhood did he have? About his race or ethnicity. Is he a member of a group that has been historically oppressed? Justice demands that everyone be equal under the law. Social justice demands that everyone be equal, period. Economically, socially, and in every other possible way. Justice asks, who did it? Social justice asks, why did he do it?
Curtis Bowers, somehow the weapon of social justice, as you write, has become the world's salvation gospel. I don't know how it happened, but it did.
Yes, he who defines the terms wins the argument. And that's what's happened on so many fronts. They have defined what things mean, but they've not used the correct dictionary definitions. They have modified them, and it's a very powerful weapon against us. Social justice was started by the Marxists as a way of hijacking the church. They knew they needed a special movement that would use Christian terminology, that would sound very Christian and biblical, and even throw Jesus into the mix if necessary, to get them to be working at these do-gooder, social gospel type things. Even Dr. Walter Rosenbusch, who started the social justice gospel back in the late 1800s, he, very interestingly enough, was a member of the Fabian Socialist Society. Which, what was their goal? To socialize the world. The goal was socialism. And that's what he laid the foundation for that they're going on today, of turning the church as an instrument to promote socialism instead of spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ,
right,
which gives everyone hope and everyone. It's just amazing how they do these things.
Well, it's like,
all right, we're going to stop the tape right there today, but we're going to pick right back up there tomorrow. That was Curtis Bauer, and he was on the Jan Markell show on talking about the church, how it's been hijacked and infiltrated by those using social justice. All right, that's it for today. Thank you for joining us. Listen to us all day long because we're in your corner right here on Ghostbusters.
Let the day-